Hello there, this is the Romance Program. I'm volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. I've got one story coming up this hour from True Love Magazine. It's called From Widow to Marked Woman. Here's the story. At least it was cool inside the funeral parlor. Thanks to the unseasonable heat and humidity, my hair was limp and my entire body felt soggy and listless. I had to force myself to sit up straight so that my 8-year-old son, BJ, would know I was okay. Sitting beside me in the Portman Brothers mortuary, his lower lip jutting out, BJ was trying to behave too, trying to be grown up and reassuring, obviously hoping he wouldn't set Mom off again. "It's okay to cry," I said softly, looking down tenderly at my son. My own eyes filled with tears, and BJ darted an alarmed glance at me. "Sweetheart," I said, "Mommy's going to cry, but I'm not going to break down again. I promise, darling." BJ sniffed and brushed his tears away with the back of his hand. "Is that Daddy?" he asked me in an awed voice. His eyes grew huge when he looked toward the simple pine box at the front of the funeral chapel. The casket was closed because of the way Bill had died and the length of time that had passed before they'd recovered his body. It was going to stay closed. I hadn't noticed that BJ had slipped his hand into mine until he squeezed it, as if he were holding on for dear life. Unable to trust myself to say anything, I nodded. I heard a man's voice say softly, "Mrs. Fontana, please allow me to extend my condolences." I looked up at a tall, slender man in his mid-30s. His brown hair was thinning and he had a long, sad face, but his blue eyes were mild and friendly looking behind silver-rimmed glasses, and his voice was kind. "I'm Tate Draper. I'm with Harner Enterprises." I'd received a sympathy card from somebody named Tate Draper. I remembered it had been the only such note I'd received. In fact, his name was also on the card attached to the large spray of roses that stood at me at one end of Bill's coffin. At the other end of the coffin was a larger arrangement of flowers from Harner Enterprises. The modest wreath I'd ordered lay between them. No one else had sent flowers. "How do you do, Mr. Draper?" I quavered. Across from me, two men, both wearing jeans, short-sleeved shirts, and no ties, entered the chapel. They slipped into the rear pew, and each of them looking as uncomfortable as I felt, I recognized them as some of Bill's friends. "I'm in charge of human resources at Harner," Mr. Draper said to me, lowering his voice. "I wanted to talk to you about your husband's benefits." He blushed suddenly and looked mortified. "Not now, of course. Maybe I can drop by your place sometime." "I already received a letter from your company," I said. "It explained all about Bill's benefits." Bill had been socking away $50 a month in an IRA, I'd discovered. I hadn't known that. It was mine now, or would be, when I signed certain papers and sent them back to Harner Enterprises. The people at Harner were going to handle the Social Security claims for me, and they'd already sent me Bill's final paycheck. "I may have some additional news for you, Mrs. Fontana," Mr. Draper said in his soft voice. "I'll let you know." Tate Draper nodded at me, grinned awkwardly at BJ, who was staring up at him through enormous eyes, and stood up to leave. A moment later, he was sitting in the near pew opposite the one Bill's friends had taken. Cooper Sinclair noticed me glancing curiously in that direction and smiled at me, suddenly looking almost jovial. Jadrian Klein, Bill's best friend in this horrible little town, caught my eye, too. Jadrian, it seemed to me, was trying hard not to smile. Mr. Draper was waiting outside the funeral parlor when BJ and I emerged. He smiled nervously when he caught my eye. He looked disconcerted, and I wondered if he was embarrassed on my behalf. It hadn't been much of a funeral when Mr. Portman had finished the main part of the service and asked if anybody would like to say a few words about the deceased. No one had stepped forward. "You must be BJ," Dr. Draper said, smiling down at my son. "You're pretty big for 8. You like baseball?" BJ's lower lip was trembling again, and he squeezed my left hand for comfort. "Sure," he said. I guess so." Hamer Harner, that is, Enterprises, is sponsoring a new team in the Pee Wee League when school lets out in a few weeks. Maybe you'd like to try out." BJ glanced up at me, puzzled. I told him not to talk to strange men, and he'd obviously decided that Mr. Draper was a pretty strange man. "I'm one of the coaches," Mr. Draper said. "Or I will be if the team gets off the ground." "You didn't come here to recruit players," I said sharply. "What is it that you want from us, Mr. Draper?" The smile disappeared from Tate Draper's face. "It's about your husband's benefits. Maybe this isn't a good time." He shot BJ a worried look. "BJ knows his father is dead," I said bluntly, "and I've already received a letter from Harner Enterprises. I believe I told you that." "The thing is," Dr. Draper went on in a quiet voice, "we had to determine whether your husband was an independent contractor or an employee of Harner Enterprises." "Bill was an independent contractor," I said firmly. "It was the only way he'd operate. He always said that a master electrician who didn't work for himself was a fool. He said that anybody over the age of 30 who didn't work for himself..." I broke off, feeling overcome with emotion. "Was a fool?" Mr. Draper finished for me. Surprisingly, he was smiling again. It was the first expression I'd seen on his face that day that didn't look rehearsed, that looked genuine. "I can't say I disagree with that, but the fact remains that before your husband was given the contract to do the electrical work on the rigs, he had to sign an agreement promising Harner Enterprises his exclusive services for the duration of the job. By law, that made him an employee." I stared at him, confused. I don't understand." "Neither did my bosses until I explained it to them," Mr. Draper said. "But once they did, they agreed there was only one thing to do." "What is that?" "Follow through on the insurance policy our company carries on offshore workers. Sometime in the next few weeks, you'll be receiving a check in the amount of $50,000. I hope it will help you get through this. It's all right, if it's all right with you, in fact. I'm hoping you'll let me help you get through this. That's part of my job, you know, helping the families of our deceased employees cope." It wasn't something I'd ever tell Mr. Draper, but coping was what I'd spent my whole marriage learning how to do. Maybe it was what I'd been training for all my life. And maybe that's why I'd been so polite to Mr. Draper than I could have been. Not rude, exactly, but cold, distant. On the outside, anyway. Inside, I was stunned. When BJ and I got back to our two-bedroom apartment, I was still too shaken by Mr. Draper's news to know exactly how I felt about it. Finally, I thought, Bill did something right. But that wasn't fair. Bill had done lots of things right over the years, but he'd never involved me in any of the decisions he'd made. He'd never even let me know that there was a decision to be made until he'd already made it. That was how our marriage had worked. Bill had made the decisions. I'd done the packing. And since Bill's decisions had almost always involved looking for greener pastures in some other part of the country, I'd done lots of packing. We'd lived all over. Even BJ's birth hadn't changed Bill's conviction that somewhere in some distant part of the country there was a perfect situation for a man of his talents. I guess that was because Bill had itchy feet and he just couldn't stand the thought of calling another man boss. So he'd taken his skills where he could sell them on his own terms. Mostly we'd wound up at construction sites. Most weren't experiences distinctive enough to be worth remembering. We'd lived near Atlantic City on three separate occasions because Bill got the contract for the electrical work on three of the new casinos that sprang up in that city like mushrooms. We'd spent 6 months in Greenland when BJ was 2 years old. Pipelines need heat or the oil gets too sluggish to flow, and Bill was a genius at rigging generators and doing whatever else it was that delivered electric power to the pipes. Bill had loved that job, and he'd been offered a really good salary with bonuses if he'd sign with the company that took over from the independents, but Bill had turned it down. They were building a dam in Colorado, and Bill wanted to get involved in that, too. It was a small dam, of course. There was no way an independent contractor like Bill could compete with large firms in the bigger projects. Eventually, we wound up in Texas. Bill had been working on a rig for Harner Enterprises when he died. He'd gone aloft during a storm to repair a faulty connection, and he'd been hit by lightning. The shock had thrown him clear off the platform. It had been almost 2 weeks before his body was recovered. To my surprise, Jadrian Klein dropped by the evening after Bill's funeral. Jadrian was a tall, good-looking man who, like almost everyone else in town, worked for Harner Enterprises. He was a heavy-duty mechanic and a very good one, Bill had told me. Jadrian had been Bill's best friend, but that didn't mean a lot to me. Bill had been the sort of man who made friends easily without ever becoming truly close to them. Bill's other good friend was Cooper Sinclair, who worked at one of the storage depots as a warehouseman. "Just thought I'd see how you were getting along," Jadrian said when I answered the door. I was wearing a ratty bathrobe over my slip, and the last thing I wanted was a visitor. "I'm fine," I said. "How's BJ?" "I just put him to bed." "Good kid, BJ," Jadrian said. Somehow he'd insinuated himself into the front room. He was wearing clean slacks and a freshly ironed shirt, and he'd even shaved. He closed the door behind him and moved over to the sofa. "Isn't Denise with you?" I asked. I wanted to thank her for that casserole she sent over. "Me and Denise split up a few days ago," Jadrian said. "We had some good times, I guess, but she was nothing special to me, you know. We were just friends." Denise was a tall, red-headed woman in her early 30s. She'd always been pleasant to me, and I'd enjoyed her company. Bill had liked her, though. Bill hadn't approved of her of the sort of women who hung around bars, shacked up with guys they weren't married to and had loud, brassy demeanors. Bill hadn't cared all that much for the few married women we knew either, come to think of it, and he'd hated Valeda, our landlady, who lived right across the hall. One of those women, he called her, meaning that she'd been divorced more than once. It didn't count that her last husband had died while she was still married to him. I was thinking you might like to get away from this place for an hour or two, Jadrian suggested suddenly. I mean, you've been cooped up in here since it happened, right? I was thinking we could go get a drink, for old time's sake, you know. Toast Bill's memory, maybe talk a little. Bet it would do you a world of good. I can't leave BJ alone, I said, taken aback by the invitation. Valeda's home. I saw her in the hall just a few minutes ago. She'd be more than happy to take care of BJ for an hour or two. I'm sure she would. I can't, Jadrian, I said irritably. I'm tired and it's too hot outside and I can't let BJ wake up and find me gone. Maybe another time. Jadrian actually smiled as if that was the response he'd been hoping for. Okay, he said. I just thought I'd ask. He was still smiling when he let himself out a moment later. I went into the bathroom and started running lukewarm water, the only kind that came out of this apartment's taps, into the tub. I tried to remember if I ever met a man who scared me more than Jadrian Klein did. He liked me, I knew that, and that bothered me. What bothered me even more was that I sort of liked Jadrian. He was tall and muscular with a handsome face and an engaging, happy-go-lucky manner, the exact opposite of Bill. What bothered me most was that I'd almost accepted Jadrian's invitation moments ago. Bill was one day in his grave, and that's how lonely I already was. When I finished bathing, I got out of the tub and studied my reflection in the full-length mirror. Bill had nailed to the inside of the bathroom door. Oh, the mirror was. I was only 26 years old, and I had a good figure and a pretty enough face. All at once, I found myself crying. I'd cried a lot over the last few days, and that had been for Bill. This was different. I was crying for myself. I was 26. My husband was dead, and the only other man I knew who might care for me wasn't somebody I trusted. Nothing had ever gone right for me, and nothing was ever going to go right for me. I was still crying when I put on my nightgown, still crying when I went into the other room and lay down on the bed, the cotton sheets already warm against my skin, the air in the room humid and hateful, still crying when I fell asleep. At about 10 in the morning, there was a knock on the front door. My landlady, Valeda, was standing in the hall wearing a sympathetic smile. Hey, Chiara, she said in her husky voice. You're looking great. You took BJ to school today, huh? I must have seemed glad to see her because Valeda's smile expanded. Valeda was a tall, blonde woman in her late 30s, a little plump but very pretty, full lips, high cheekbones, and deep blue eyes. Okay, her hair was dyed, but everything else was real, including the sort of figure that made men glance back over their shoulders whenever Valeda walked by. In spite of the fact that she'd always known how Bill had felt about her, that was probably why she hadn't attended his funeral. We were good friends. Soon, Valeda and I were sitting at my kitchen table, sipping coffee. I felt almost cheerful for the first time in what seemed like a long while. "No, I mean it," Valeda was saying teasingly. "With that ribbon in your hair, you look real cute. Maybe a little more lip gloss, though." She eyed me speculatively, then shook her head. "Anyway, I'm glad to see you're taking care of yourself. The last few days, you've looked like a zombie." "I felt like a zombie, too," I laughed shakily. "I guess I still do." "Yeah, I know how it is, kid. I lost my Adam almost 10 years ago, but I haven't forgotten what it was like to find myself alone." I'd only known Valeda for a few months, but in that time, she'd told me a lot of horror stories about her late husband. I couldn't help but wonder just how well she understood what it meant to lose someone who mattered to you. But then again, it wasn't like my life with Bill had been all roses either. I'd learned that a husband isn't just somebody you care about. He's part of your life, a part of who you are. Even losing a husband as cold and distant as Bill had been was like having part of yourself cut away. So maybe Valeda did understand. "Oh, I couldn't," I found myself gasping a few minutes later after I told her about Jadrian's visit. I was actually blushing as if Valeda had just urged me to do something indecent. "It's too soon." "Hey," Valeda responded, her own tone amused. "I'm not suggesting you start dating or anything, but Jadrian and Cooper are pals of yours, right? They were pals of Bill's anyway. And I'm a friend, aren't I? So you're going out to the Paradise Lounge with a few friends for dinner. Nobody will think anything wrong of it. Nobody will even notice, for that matter." "But, BJ, Mrs. Lawford in apartment one will take care of him, free of charge. I already talked to her. She knows what you're going through, and she's got oodles of time on her hands. She loves kids." "But the Paradise Lounge, not all that classy, I know," Valeda chuckled. "But hey, they serve good steaks and cold beer. What more could we need?" Somehow I let Valeda coax me into agreeing. It wasn't just that I'd been without company since Bill's death. Except for a few visits with Valeda and Mrs. Lawford, I'd been without company the entire time. I'd been in town. I was going to go crazy if I didn't get out and about occasionally. And poor BJ needed a man who wasn't already down in the dump. Oh, a mom, that is. Who wasn't already down in the dumps. Had I even thought about that? At 7 that evening, Valeda and I were walking down the short flight of cement steps that led from our 2-story, 8-unit building on the sidewalk. Jadrian Klein's 4-year-old sports car was parked at the curb, with Jadrian behind the wheel and Cooper Sinclair in the back seat. "Mrs. Fontana?" I heard a familiar voice call out unexpectedly. Coming down the sidewalk to our left was Tate Draper. He was wearing slacks and a short-sleeved white shirt. The knot of his bright red tie pulled loose and the top button of his shirt unfastened. I wondered why a man who wasn't actually at the office would even wear a tie on an evening as hot as this one. "Mrs. Rowe," he said, nodding at Valeda. "Do I know you, buddy?" Valeda demanded. Valeda was wearing a pale yellow dress of polished cotton and a pair of open-toed white pumps. Her long hair was braided and wrapped around her head. She looked really glamorous, but she also looked hostile. She stared coldly at Mr. Draper. I handed a few of the details of your late husband's estate. He extended his hand to her pleasantly. Tate Draper, or Draper, maybe. Oh, yeah. Valeda smiled and shook his hand. You were a lot younger then, with a lot more hair, too. Been a while, hasn't it? Quite a while, Mr. Draper said eventually. You still own this building, then? Why shouldn't I still own it? Valeda snapped. Valeda, I said in a startled voice. I found myself turning red with embarrassment. No reason at all, ma'am, Mr. Draper said in a calm voice. It's just that I remember how eager you once were to get rid of it. I didn't understand much about business then, Valeda said. I didn't know what a gold mine this place was. If Adam had thought to inform me, Valeda shut her mouth with a snap and darted a sidelong glance at me. Just like your Bill, he was, honey. Adam, I mean, absolutely convinced that his little wifey had no sense at all and just couldn't understand great big man stuff. Did you want to talk to me, Mr. Draper? I asked quickly. From the car, Jadrian gave a quick honk on the horn. From the expression on his face, it was clear that he was getting impatient. I happened to be in the neighborhood and thought I'd drop by and see how you were getting along, Mr. Draper said. As it happens, I have no new information for you about that matter we discussed the other day. Just a social call, huh, buddy? Valeda said with a short laugh. In that case, maybe you won't mind if... Chiara and I leave. We have a dinner reservation and we're going to be late if you keep us standing out here. Mr. Draper turned slightly and gave Jadrian a measured look. I don't mind a bit, he said. Some other day, perhaps, Mrs. Fontana. Next time, I'll call first. Valeda had arranged things so that I found myself sitting in the front seat of the car with Jadrian. In the dining room of the Paradise Lounge, we were led to a booth against the far wall. After I took a seat, Jadrian slid in beside me, and Valeda and Cooper sat together opposite us. I felt a little uncomfortable with this arrangement because, as far as I was concerned, I was here with Valeda, and Jadrian and Cooper were just a couple of guys who happened to tag along. Anyway, Jadrian behaved himself with perfect propriety, even more amazingly, so did Cooper. We had cocktails before dinner at Valeda's insistence, and while we were waiting for the food to be served, we talked about Bill and about what a good guy he'd been. We talked about BJ and how tough it was on a little boy to have to grow up without a father. It was 10 o'clock when I got home. I collected BJ, drowsy from sleep, and let him back down the hall to our apartment. Valeda stayed with me until BJ and I were inside. Still in the hall, she refused an invitation to come in for coffee. I think he likes you, you know, she sing-songed, her eyes suddenly merry. I've never seen him behave so well with a woman. If you ask me, you two are good for each other. Who? I quavered, sounding panicked. Valeda just laughed cheerfully, turned and flitted a farewell wave at me over her shoulder, heading for her own door directly across the hall. Closing the door, I led BJ into his bedroom, tucked him in. He was asleep as soon as his head hit the pillow and wondered if I was still blushing. I wondered that. Jadrian Klein, I was thinking, didn't just behave himself tonight. He almost convinced me that he's a different man altogether from the man I'd figured him out to be. More intelligent, more sensitive, and far kinder. I went to sleep still thinking about him. Later that week, Tate Draper came by again. He looked a little uncomfortable when I let him in. He'd called earlier saying he wanted to come and see me in person because there was a problem of sorts. Once he was seated on the sofa, a cup of coffee in his hand, he gave me some forms that had to be filled out pertaining to the exact nature of Bill's activities when he'd been killed. The thing is, Mr. Draper said when I questioned him, they have to establish the fact that it wasn't a suicide. In that case, the policy would be null and void. At the very least, they'd be able to force you to accept a settlement for less than the full amount, considerably less. Suicide? I gasped in outrage. That's crazy. Bill didn't. He wouldn't. Mr. Ray Draper made a helpless gesture. I swear to you, it isn't anything to worry about. If they think they can prove this was a suicide, then they'll have to prove that Bill knew where lightning was about to strike. That's just so ridiculous. He mulled the matter over for a moment, his features growing somber. It's just the way people are, Chiara. That insurance guy doesn't think this is going to save his company any money, and he doesn't harbor any ill will toward you. He just wants his bosses to see that he's doing something. You know, getting through the motions, or going through the motions. It sounds terrible to me, I stormed, red-faced and close to tears. It just means a short delay, that's all. You did tell me on the phone that you were doing all right financially, didn't you? For the time being, I glared at him as if the whole thing was his fault. Mr. Draper put his cup on the coffee table and smiled crookedly. You also said something about looking for work. I know it's pretty early. I mean, it's only been a few weeks since the funeral. It's been well over a month since Bill actually died, I pointed out, and sooner or later, I've got to start earning a living. Even that $50,000 won't get me through the rest of my life. You were planning to invest it, right? You said something about BJ's college fund. All the more reason to get a job. The only problem is, Tate Draper knew what the problem was. I told him that I had no skills and no particular talents. Even worse, I had no experience in the job market at all. This isn't exactly a company town, but Harner Enterprises has fingers in a lot of the local pies, Mr. Draper remarked. They even own a third of the Paradise Lounge. If you're serious about that job, I could probably help you find something. Jadrian dropped by the following night, a little after 6 o'clock. His hair was neatly slicked back, and his jaw glistened with aftershave. It was obvious that he was trying to make some sort of impression on me. I don't want to butt in if you're busy, he said. Across the room, BJ was sitting in front of the TV watching cartoons. Hi, BJ, Jadrian called out. How's the boy? BJ, who probably had only the vaguest sort of memory of Jadrian, gave him a puzzled smile and turned his attention back to the TV. "I really can't go anywhere tonight," I told Adrian. "Yeah, I can see you've already eaten." He glanced through the archway at the kitchen table, still bearing our plates from our dinner. "But I was just going to ask you to drop in on Valletta with me. She's feeling kind of low, and I thought we could cheer her up." "Valletta?" I asked, puzzled. "Is something wrong?" Jadner shrugged. "Nothing in particular. She gets the blues from time to time, that's all. She doesn't really like this town, you know. Hates it, in fact. Every now and then she gets restless. Feels like if she doesn't get away, go somewhere nicer, she'll go crazy." "Why doesn't she just do that, then?" I asked. Jadrian was still standing just inside the door, and I was glad that he hadn't helped himself to a seat on the sofa and asked me for a beer. That's usually what he did. "It's this place," Jadrian gestured around vaguely. "This apartment building, I mean. She owns it outright, you know. Adam owned it when they were married, and it became hers when he died. 10 years ago, that was. You never knew Adam, did you?" 10 years ago, I'd never been out of Ohio," I said. "I was 16. "Yeah, sure. I knew that. Anyway, this place is a gold mine. But Valletta can't afford to give it up, and she doesn't know anyone she can trust to run it for her. So she's sort of stuck here, I guess you could say. Every now and then, though, she talks about selling it. I wish I had the dough to buy it from her." There are three vacant apartments upstairs," I pointed out, "and the whole place is run down." "Valletta has a waiting list of at least 50 prospective tenants," Jadrian countered. "And the reason these apartments are empty is because Valletta's got some sort of tax problem. She just can't afford to take in that much money. Don't ask me to explain it to you because I don't understand that sort of stuff. Something about tax write-offs, I think." I didn't have any better idea than Jadrian about what any of that meant, so I didn't say anything. I called to BJ and asked him if he'd like to go over to see Auntie Valletta. You know, I don't know if it's Valletta or Valletta, but since BJ liked Valletta a lot, he was more than happy to do so. Valletta did look a little blue when the three of us came calling on her a few minutes later. She brightened up pretty quickly, though. Jadrian told her some jokes that cracked her up. BJ settled down in front of the TV set. Then, for some reason, the conversation turned to the town in general, and Valletta's spirits sank again. "It's okay," she said. "I mean, there are worse towns, but I really miss Newark, you know. That's where I'm from. I don't suppose I'll ever get back there again." "You could sell this place and move," I pointed out. "I sort of promised Adam I wouldn't. And as much as I hate this town, I love owning my own apartment building. And anyway, I'd never get a price for anything like what it's worth." She shook her head firmly. "No, I'm doomed to spend the rest of my life here." She smiled at me, trying to make me think she was feeling better. Weeks went by, and soon BJ was out of school on summer vacation. Jadrian and I were seeing each other about once a week by then. The more time we spent together, the more I found myself liking him. He'd changed from a boorish, crude rogue into a quiet, thoughtful man. He was even shy around me in an awkward little boy way that I found endearing. Nothing serious was happening between us. Jadrian seemed to recognize that I wasn't ready for that. But we'd eat out occasionally or see a movie, usually with BJ, or we'd just spend the evening at Valletta's, talking and laughing and just generally enjoying ourselves. "That's silly," Valeda told me one day when I mentioned that I didn't want to set tongues wagging with my behavior. In the first place, except for me and Jadrian, nobody in town knows you. In the second place, you and Jadrian aren't doing anything that would cause tongues to wag. She hesitated for a moment and gave me a long, speculative look. Are you? No, I told her. Not a darn thing. Jadrian and I was being the perfect gentleman, and I wasn't ready for that sort of relationship anyway. She chuckled that throaty chuckle of hers and squeezed my forearm warmly. And in the third place, Bill wasn't exactly the sort of husband you grieve for, was he? How'd that happen, kid? How'd a pretty young thing like you get hooked up with a guy like Bill? Just thinking about that made me uncomfortable. Talking about it with her made me feel downright miserable, as if I were being unfaithful to Bill. But I talked about it. We talked about it late into the night. My parents had been killed in a car accident 3 days after I graduated from high school. My grandmother had come to town to stay with me. She was very old and not in good health. She was terrified that she might die before I turned 18. If that happened, she told me, they'd put me in some sort of home. I didn't know what she meant by that, and I'm not sure she did either. The possibility that I might be put in some sort of home bothered her a lot, though. So it bothered me. In fact, it terrified me. Bill Fontana had been a friend of Dad's. Bill was nearing 40 and had never been married. He'd never been in one place long enough to get to know a woman well enough to marry her, he told me. But he'd gotten to know me pretty well, and he was really fond of me. And if I didn't have somebody else in mind, how would I feel about marrying him? What I told my grandmother about Bill's suggestion, it wasn't exactly a proposal. She'd been delighted, and just like that, I'd become Mrs. Bill Fontana. 2 months later, Bill and I were living in a studio apartment in Manchester, New Hampshire, when we got word that my grandmother had died. I was already pregnant with BJ by then and didn't get back to Ohio for the funeral. I comforted myself with the thought that at least Granny had had the solace of knowing that her only relative hadn't wound up in some kind of home. A few weeks after that conversation with her, Jadrian and I dropped BJ off at Mrs. Lawford's apartment and were leaving the building when Tate Draper came up to the walk. He smiled at me. "Good evening, Mrs. Fontana," he said in a colder voice. He added, "Klein." "Yo, Draper," Jadrian said, grinning. "Every time I see you, you've got less hair." It was obvious that Jadrian and Mr. Draper didn't like each other. I hadn't even been aware that they really knew each other. "Pee-wee League starts tomorrow," Mr. Draper said, focusing on me. I thought I'd drop in on BJ and tell him I'll be picking him up at 9 a.m. Is that okay with you? I nodded and started to discuss the matter, but Jadrian cut me off. Must be nice to have the sort of cushy job where you can take off on a work day anytime you feel like it. You ought to think about getting yourself that kind of job, Klein. Jadrian muttered something. "Mr. Draper, any progress on that check? There's been another delay. I tell you what," he eyed Jadrian absently, then glanced toward the curb. "I'll come by a little early tomorrow and we can talk about it." "What check is that?" Jadrian asked. "It's nothing," I said hastily. "A little money Bill had coming to him. It figures that they'd make you wait for it," Jadrian groused. "You work for Harner Enterprises yourself, Jadrian," I pointed out. "I thought you liked your job." It's okay, but that darn draper probably makes 5 times as much as I do, and he doesn't do half the work. We arrived at the Paradise Lounge. Cooper Sinclair and a few of Jadrian's friends were there. Jadrian led me to a vacant booth, actually waving Cooper away when he started to approach. "Not tonight, buddy," he said. "Can't you see I'm busy?" With a hurt expression on his face, Cooper retreated to the bar and his beer. "Is anything wrong, Jadrian?" I asked. All at once, Jadrian had reverted to his old self. He waved one hand aimlessly. "It's that draper guy. He always gets my goat." "Put him in his place," I sounded as confused as I felt. She's saying, "Put him in his place," like that. "Well, you know, show him that I'm a good man as he is, as successful a man, I mean. If I had 50 or 60,000, oh, well, I don't, so there's no use thinking about it." "What would you do with $50,000 or $60,000, Jadrian?" I asked. He eyed me warily. "I'm not asking to borrow any of your money." "Good heavens," I said, half choking on a laugh, "as if I had that kind of money. On the other hand, if you could scrape up that amount, you could make yourself a pretty good turn." "With $50,000? That's what Valeda wants for the building. She's asking for more, but that's what she'd be willing to settle for. Valeda will never sell that place. She's told me that a dozen times. She got a letter from her mother today. Didn't she mention it to you?" "I haven't seen Valeda today. I ran into her at the grocery store. The old lady's dying. She's got 6 months. I mean, that's what Valeda told me. She wants to go back to Newark and take care of her, be with her right up to the end." "Of course," I said sadly. "Anyway, that's why she'll let the place go for a song." "Are you sure it's a goodbye?" I asked. "Hey, you know how much you're paying for your apartment. Multiply that by 8 and ask yourself how that sounds as a monthly income." "It's nothing big," Tate Draper was telling me the next morning. "The insurance company is still haggling about whether your husband was an employee or an independent contractor. Sooner or later, they'll have to settle." "How much later?" I asked. Mr. Draper gave me an odd look. "Does it matter? Are you having some sort of emergency? I'd just like to have this thing over and done with." Mr. Draper left, taking BJ with him to the Pee Wee baseball practice. I hung around the apartment for a few hours, feeling restless and almost excited. I'd been awake half the night thinking about the idea Jadrian had put in my head. We wouldn't have to pay rent because I'd be the owner of the building. Not that the apartment building was anybody's dream. A lot of the baseboards were warped and the exterior paint was cracked, so the place always looked shabby. We'd had a lot of trouble with the electrical wiring, too. Bill had always made comments about the potential hazards of old wiring. When I couldn't stand being cooped up alone anymore, I decided to go over and call on Valeda. She'd probably be packing now, and I could give her a hand with that. And if she was really willing to settle for $50,000, maybe I could get her to ask about the condition of the building to help me decide if I really wanted to go through with this. When I knocked softly on her door, it swung open at my touch. My own door did that too. Hesitantly, I stepped through the door and into the darkened front room. "Valeda," I called out in a low voice, "are you here? I just about decided she wasn't home and was turning to leave when I heard a sound. It came from the hallway. I heard it again and moved in that direction. At the nearer of the two bedrooms, the door was ajar. I heard that cry again. Had Valeria hurt herself? I was about to call out when something stopped me. Something about that moan hadn't really seemed to suggest that somebody was in pain. Then I heard a familiar voice saying, "Like old times, huh, baby?" "Jadrian," I thought. "It's always been good between us, Jadrian," I heard her say, "and if we get that 50,000, it'll be all the better. San Francisco, right, babe? When we get the cash, we head straight for the Golden Gate." "Anywhere but Newark, Jadrian," she chuckled. "But first we have to get the cash. Just remember not to seem too anxious. You're only selling because your old lady's dying." "You're sure the settlement is for 50,000, Jadrian?" "That's what Mary says. That poor Tiara is such a hayseed, sounding like she was really enjoying herself. She'll buy the whole bit about how we're going to handle all the legal details. By the time she finds out that she's just paid 50,000 for a building owned by the savings and loan, she'll what?" I demanded angrily. I pushed the door open. "I thought you were my friend," I cried. Then I turned and ran. Behind me, I could hear Jadrian's panicked voice calling out, "Wait, it's not what you think." I'd locked my apartment door, and I had trouble with the key because my eyes were blinded by tears. "Hey, Tiara," Jadrian put the hand on my shoulder and swung me around. "Come on now. It wasn't anything. We were just friends. But hey, I only went over there to soften her up for you." "I ought to thank you," I glared at him. "Anyway, if you can just come up with the 50 grand, unfortunately," a new voice said, "she can't." Jadrian swore and I gasped. Neither of us had noticed Tate Draper approaching us. "Where's BJ?" I asked. "He's at the park, being properly supervised, I assured you." He glanced at us and shook his head. "I've been lying through my teeth, in fact." "About what?" I asked. "About that insurance policy. I've had your check in my desk drawer for more than a month now. I've just been waiting until I could find out what had sparked Jadrian Klein's interest in you. By the way, Klein, whose idea was it to send Adam on a beer run when he was in that condition? Yours or Valeria's?" "I don't know what you're talking about." "You'd have to let go of the towel to do that. Maybe, in fact, your best course of action would be to go back to Valeria's and try to figure out some other get-rich-quick scheme." For a moment, I thought Jadrian really was going to hit Draper. By the end of the month, Valeria had disappeared from the apartment building. The day I found out about that was the same day, and she's talking about he was no longer employed. That was also the day when a man from one of the town agencies came by to tell me that BJ and I had 60 days to find a new place to live. It wasn't just the writing, I found out. It wasn't even just the termite inspection, which I'd known nothing about. The three upstairs apartments were vacant because the roof was unsafe. It was on the same evening that Mr. Draper called on me. "And this is from a friend of mine," he said, handing me a business card. "It's a financial advisor." I need to learn more about handling money, I said. I still feel so stupid about... You were uninformed, not stupid. Stupid or uninformed, it comes to the same thing. Stupid people don't learn from their mistakes. All you need is to acquire some information about the world, how the world really works. I'm sure Bill was a good man, I said. I'm sure he was, but he wasn't the sort of man a 17-year-old girl should have hooked up with. And your grandmother. Her head was full of half-remembered horror stories she'd heard when she was younger. I owe you a lot, Mr. Draper. Tate, I said a bit awkwardly, but I guess you were just doing your job, I said. He grinned. That's true. You have no reason to be nice to me at all. Maybe I have one reason, I said shyly. What's that? The fact that I like you a lot. That, Draper said, is a perfectly acceptable reason for being nice to a man. It might even be an acceptable reason for letting him kiss you. I was still smiling when his lips met mine. Okay, that's the end of that story, and this is going to do it for the romance program. Thank you so much for listening. This has been Volunteer Jeannie Yost for Sun Sounds. Take care. Bye-bye.